Welcome to the M2 Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Ante. My co-host right here is Kyle Heath. This is the show where we cover gaming industry-related news. We're talking new and upcoming games, technology innovation, esports and personalities, and just the general gaming industry-related news. I guess weekly review, in a way. So, Kyle, what have you been up to, man? How's it been?
It's been good. Thanks. Thank you. 25. This is something I've actually had for, like, years. It's just like I kind of put it away like a couple years ago and like retired it. But I was like, you know, I'm going to bring it out of retirement. Their new music's coming out. I'm hype. So
Heck yeah, dude.
I'm ready for it. But yeah, dude, I don't know. Week's been good. The game I played the most this week, kind of like last week, was I continued on with Power Wash Simulator. I ended up playing that game like most of Saturday, and I'm like just over halfway done. Like it's I didn't realize how long of a game it is. But there's actually a lot to do. So yeah, I've been kind of chugging away at that. Played a lot of that, but sort of outside of that, there's not too much else gaming related, really. Obviously, you know, Carolina sports, Hornets pissed me off. It's kind of over, but teams are still doing well, so you know, we take those.
Yeah.
There's you know, we're making playoffs, so I can't you know, well, I can't complain. Yeah. I guess.
Well, hopefully, it's not mathematically clinched. I don't think.
Well, yeah. Probably not.
But yeah, they should make it. They have a lot more games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Less than a month. And I think they have like 20 games left or something crazy. Yeah. I don't even know.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
He's about a season left. No.
Yeah. Plenty more games to check out. Very exciting.
Yeah. But yeah. Doing that, you know, other than that, just working on the fitness and everything, you know, trying to hone that in. So yeah, it's been a good week. I think all things considered, but, I gotta hear about Mike, dude. What's going on? Are we playing the finals? Are we playing Rocket League? What are you playing, dude?
I don't even know what we're playing anymore. I've been playing like Halo 2 a little bit. I took off. I was gonna actually play all day yesterday, after I got home from work. But I was looking around the house and I'm like, man, I should probably like do some cleaning, tidying up, and like kind of getting my like stuff together, you know?
Yeah.
So I concentrated more on that, and now I'm like, okay, well, let me do the pod with the boy. And then afterwards, I'm going to hop on the finals because it's season 2 today. And season 2 brings a 5v5 game type, so I'm definitely going to check that out. But outside of that, man, like, really just Halo 2. I participated in a tournament, I think I said. I don't even know if that was... It wasn't this past weekend. It was last weekend. Jeez, I'm getting everything mixed up. Yeah, I got destroyed in it, basically. Played like crap.
I don't know.
Dude, I think... So, I don't know what happened. I've noticed the decline of my internet service provider in my area for the last steadily declining over the last year. That has a lot to do, I think, with more and more like complexes and everything like being built and developed around me. And also I'm on like a super old coax cable line and it's not good, man.
Jeez,
like,
yeah, that's...
I'm playing and like shooters and stuff like that. It happened to me in the finals a couple of times. I'm like getting blank shots. I'm like, it's like people aren't like they're almost skipping, but they're not skipping. It's like it's like a wraith, kind of like just moving, and it can't, it like absorbs all the damage I give it. It's very, very frustrating to play against people right now. And yeah, without further ado, I'm moving for sure at the end of the year.
Yeah.
I'm going to find something a little bit more steady, a better area. So that's been
on
my mind.
Do you have fiber internet? Or no.
No. Oh. No, I had, brother, I have not had fiber in a long time.
Man.
Yeah, I wish like I still adults. Had it. Yeah, when Halo Infinite came out, I had fiber, and I was dominating the field, and then I moved here, and I was like, yeah, I can't play this game anymore.
Yeah.
It's just like... I'm just playing a different game when it comes to first-person shooters, and it's very frustrating because there will be people that are just like, oh, you're being dramatic. It's like, dude, I've had a gig up and down less than 10 millisecond ping, and now I'm paying for a gig up for a gig down, and I'm paying for 50 gigs up, or not gigs, yeah, whatever, 1,000 gigs up. What the heck is it?
Megs. I don't
even know the megs metrics maybe. Anymore. Megs.
Yeah,
and I'm like... I'm paying for all this and it's not coming through. And then I do like the buffer bloat test to check out latency issues for gaming and like live 4K streaming. And it's just giving me grades of F. And it's like, bro, I am ruined out here. Latencies of like 150 milliseconds on average. And it's like the only way I can make it less is if I turn off all my Wi-Fi and then I like cap my downloads to about 100 megabytes or something. Like, it's frustrating. So I was thinking to myself, why don't I just get back into the single player games that are on my PC? I will play the finals still because I got like people I want to play with. Maybe I'll get on Helldivers as a PvE game, but I can't be doing this like competitive stuff anymore. To me, it's just memes. I'm getting on there only to play with like certain people and to vibe. I'm not getting on there to win. I'm not getting on there to try anymore. It's just not fun because I'll get frustrated, not that I'm losing, but at the game. And that's not a good time to like play, I don't think.
Yeah, I'd agree. All right, I think most shooters and stuff, I just literally play to spend time with friends at this point. I never like take them seriously. So I don't know.
My reaction time's also chalked. I'm too old now, man. It's all over.
See, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the whole studies behind reaction time and all that. I don't know. I feel like it wouldn't deteriorate too much to once you hit your 30s, but I'm not in my 30s yet, so I don't know.
It really doesn't deteriorate that much. It's about like just staying consistent. Like you can get some reaction times back. You have to do training, but like anything, you have to train. You have to be consistent, fluid. But I mean,
saying it's like a muscle, right? You gotta. Gotta work.
Yeah, but if you're in your 60s, I mean, dude, that might be more mental than physical.
I see grandpas on Twitch, dude, killing it. I don't know, dude.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, you see that Twitch streamer that was like an ex like sniper in the Marines, and he's out here playing Battlefield, and like,
I saw, dude. Sometimes on TikTok, like I'll be scrolling, and I saw there was I don't know her name, but she's like. She's like in her 50s or 60s and like she streams Call of Duty like on a daily basis. Like I always see her streaming and like looks like she has fun. Like it's nice. I mean she's not too bad. So it's kind of funny. I guess people you'll find. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I haven't been on Twitch in a while though. But
yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I only go on to watch friends. So I'm not on otherwise.
Yeah. I just had a self-awareness just now. I said the word like a bunch of times, so I'm gonna definitely calm down by saying that when we go through these articles.
You're just being you, Mike, is what it is. I support it.
That's a fact.
People listening right now, they love you, dude. I don't know what we're on about. Listen,
my man,
we got some news to get through, Mike. That's all I'm gonna say.
That's what I was about to do the segue. You know what I love? New studios popping up. That's what I love.
You know, I like that too, especially current times we're in the industry, which we will discuss a little bit later on in today's episode.
Oh, yeah,
but
headlining article.
Before we get there, get a couple new studios to discuss. So, former id Software devs announce a new AAA studio, Empty Vessel. Now, this is coming from Video Game Chronicles. Tom Ivan reported this. His debut title will be a sci-fi shooter powered by Unreal Engine 5. So it's nice, cool little logo, little Empty Vessel. I kind of like that. It's very sleek.
It's clean, man.
I like the font. I like the typography. It's looking nice. Very sharp edges around the P's, the Y's, and the T's. So very cool
stuff.
Looks
like knives in a way.
Yeah. Maybe there's a hidden meaning. I don't know. Anyways, veterans from the likes of id Software and Naughty Dog have announced a new AAA development studio called Empty Vessel. Based in Austin, Texas, but operating fully remote with its staff located worldwide, the studio is led by CEO and game director Emmanuel Palalik, but that doesn't. I feel like I'm saying that wrong.
Palalik?
Palalik? Palalik sounds closer, I think. Emmanuel Palalik and COO and general manager Garrett Young. Thank you, Garrett. You had an easy name. It's so hard to find those in this industry, I must say. So
it does feel that way, doesn't it? We're butchering names left and right.
Oh, shout out to Garrett. Palalik was a senior character artist at id Software for 5 years, while Young was general manager of the Doom Studio for 5 years, and also previously served as director of production in the Walt Disney Company. So the studio's founding team also includes Chief Technology Officer Wei Ning, Art Director Alex Palma, and Animation Director Rico Flores. Is it Flores or Flores? Flores? I almost want to say like Flores.
Depends. I think if it was Flores, it would have the hyphen.
So yeah, Flores. You're probably right. Rico Flores. So Palma previously spent 7 years as a character artist at id Software, while Flores worked as an animator on Naughty Dog's Uncharted 3 and Uncharted 4, and as a lead animator at BioWare. Powered by Unreal Engine 5, Empty Vessel's debut game will leverage their experience in the immersive shooter space and is inspired by film, graphic novels, and games set in dystopian sci-fi worlds. Independent Studio said its approach is, quote, to create a space to foster the innovation of a nimble core team of AAA level talent while empowering them to create high quality IPs with more attainable scope. It has raised an initial seed funding round led by Sisu Games Ventures and additional investment from Raptor Group, Tripwire Interactive co-owner Bill Monk, and former Treyarch co-studio head Dan Bunting. Quote, many game developers like myself began our journey fueled by the dream of one day bringing our worlds to life, said Polelik. By prioritizing and aligning with our strengths, we're confident it's possible to create AAA quality games with smaller, focused teams. Quote, the industry has often overlooked the people who pour their hearts and souls into crafting these worlds. With Empty Vessel, we're determined to change the narrative and make that dream a reality for as many developers as we can. Okay, Mike, I like what I'm hearing.
Sounds like they got a lot of industry support from pretty well-known people, from well-known companies.
Yeah, for sure. This is
pretty cool.
I think the biggest thing, obviously, is like we're talking about industry veterans here, so it's people that know what they're doing. They've been around a lot of structures, so they kind of they just know the process. And I think a smaller team, I think, is certainly good. My only concern with a smaller team is that it could take longer to make the games. But I mean, it's kind of just a running theme at this point, especially if you're making these kind of worlds like this. And it's just like games nowadays just take longer to make. And that's just, I guess, one of the realities of it. So it's not a huge downside. But yeah, I mean, dystopian space stuff, I'm all in with a concept like that. It's like just that idea alone gets me excited, I think. But Empty Vessel's one to look out for, I think.
Yeah, I think this is a good idea. I really like the fact that it's going to be an Unreal Engine 5. Just adopting the new technology and the new game engines is always going to be a good idea.
Yeah, for sure. Dude, I don't know, Mike. There's not too much else to say about this. I'm just excited to kind of hear this new studio on the rise. And this isn't the only one we'll be covering. So exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's funny. I think kind of this episode is more themed towards just like what's going on in the gaming industry and in terms of studios. It's interesting to see how many studios have either closed up, laid off people, and then shortly thereafter you have kind of side studios sprouting from where those ones disappeared, I think.
Yeah. I know, like, I don't think it's covered here or aren't gonna cover it, but there's I know from like Treyarch Studios excuse me, I think it was Treyarch, David Vonnegut, the community manager for a very long time of like the Black Ops series and those COD games.
I even know that name.
Yeah. He left Treyarch recently, and he's actually starting his own studio. So it's like, you know, you have all these people just kind of either leaving or getting laid off, and they're just like, you know what? Like, we have the experience, we know what to do. Why don't we just do our own thing? So it's like, get some funding. You have a lot of relationships you build, I feel like, throughout
get career. Get people vouching for you, and you can get some fun. Yeah, like you said, that's genius, getting funding in there and
I feel like it's I don't want to sit here and say it's easy, but I feel like it's definitely a clear path, I think, when you've been doing it for so long. So
yeah, I mean, they put in a lot of work over many years, probably decades, just to be where they are, and then to have the opportunity of support of your peers for the relationships you build, it's always great.
It sure is, Mike. It sure is. You know, we covered some earlier this year. Whenever CES was around, it was an MSI peripheral device. Not really a peripheral device, it's a standalone thing, but still, we got some more info to
look at. Yeah, the handheld, yeah, we absolutely do. So we've covered a couple of the handhelds, I think, multiple times, all of them, really. ANU is one of them, and then you had MSI, I think Lenovo made one, Switch, obviously Nintendo, and then Steam Deck being, I think, probably the biggest, most successful one since the launch of the Nintendo Switch. So the MSI Claw, and this article is from Emma Roth, who we covered multiple times from The Verge. So Emma Roth wrote a article here titled, "The MSI Claw Has Arrived to Take on the Steam Deck. The base model of the Intel Core ultra-powered gaming handheld is now available for $700. Sheesh. But at the same time, due to inflation, I don't think that's a lot anymore. the prices are pretty wild here, so let's get into it. Wild as, I think, a good thing. So the MSI Claw has officially arrived as the base model of MSI's Core ultra-powered handheld gaming machine is now available on MSI's website for $700. There are two other higher spec models, too, but they're listed as coming on March 12th, and here are the new models. So you essentially have a price range of $700, $750, and $800. That is USD, by the way. They all, so the $700 one comes with the Core Ultra 5 and 512 gigabyte SSD. Then $50 more gets you the Core Ultra 7, say a little bit upgraded CPU, plus the same amount of storage, so 512 gigabytes SSD, and then $800 gives you the upgraded CPU plus a 1 terabyte SSD, which is makes sense, I think, from a pricing standpoint. You can also pre-order all three MSI Club models from Newegg with availability starting March 15th. Pre-orders on Newegg come with a couple of freebies, including Skull and Bones, Standard Edition game code, and Xbox Game Pass free for 1 month, which I think is the real value, the Xbox Game Pass. We're kind of Xbox Game Pass enthusiasts over here. So you can buy the MSI Claw from Best Buy, which will ship April 4th. Now, just going through the pictures, they look good as ever, don't they?
Yeah, I mean...
looks like it looks comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's looking good. I think one of the main things you had talked about when we first looked at it was the vents on the back and just how how much ventilation there is on this thing.
Yep.
It's like the whole back grill is just like exposed almost.
Yeah, and it's clean too. It's got that traditional MSI red, which always helps. Looks really cool. I love MSI. But yeah.
Yeah.
So shall we continue on? The MSI first announced the Claw at SES 2024 in January, joining the Steam Deck, Asus Rogue Ally, that's the other one I was forgetting, Asus, and the Lenovo Legion Go, in a growing portable PC market. In addition to being the first device to come with Intel's Core Ultra processors, it runs Windows and features a 7-inch 1080p 48 to 120 hertz variable refresh rate LCD display. I'm going to say monitor. I'm so used to us covering monitors on the show. So the MSI Claw also has an Intel Arc graphics chip with 8 XE cores, a 53-watt battery with 2 hours of battery life, and Hall Effect triggers. Hall Effect, we're big fans of that. That's anti-stick drift, basically. Hall Effect triggers and joysticks, which should save you from having to deal with stick drift. It comes with some other handy features as well, including a power button with fingerprint sensor, a micro SD slot, and a Thunderbolt 4 port. And if you're interested in the MSI Claw, make sure to check out the hands-on review at SES that The Verge did. So what do you think of it? Are you excited? I think we need to see some reviews.
Yeah,
really check this out.
For sure. Battery life only 2 hours does kind of suck. But I mean, just the power,
for sure, yeah.
The power of the device. I mean, I guess it explains it. about why it's so
would
bad.
Would that be a deciding factor for you?
I mean, I don't really handheld game much to begin with, in all honesty. However, if I was getting a handheld, I think just 2 hours of battery life's kind of just like it's just kind of like not it for me. I feel like if I want a handheld device, I'd want to get at least like 4 hours. Like, you know, just to kind of have something like reliable there. That being said, there's probably not many situations where you'd go over 2 hours where you're not around some sort of power port that you can access. It may not be that huge of a deal. I mean, the fact that there's 120 hertz refresh rate on this like little display, though, in this device with this kind of power is pretty impressive. I think they're certainly doing it right in that aspect to make sure the power's there and good. And you have all sorts of, you have like Thunderbolt on it, and you have like a fingerprint button. And
that's pretty, yeah. I think they might be the first one that I've seen or can remember seeing with the fingerprint sensor.
Yeah.
That's pretty convenient.
I mean, they're doing the joysticks and the triggers, right, Mike, with the Hall Effect. So,
the Hall Effect.
That's a huge plus.
Yes, it's finally becoming the norm.
Yeah.
It happened so quickly, too. It's like controller manufacturers, like third-party controller manufacturers, started putting them in, and then all of a sudden it's like they caught on and now everybody wants them.
Yeah. I mean,
it's very nice to see.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's technology out there, we don't have stick drift, so it increases the longevity of your sticks. I mean, why would you not?
Exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just common sense, really. So, I like that. I mean, the fact there's macro buttons on it too, I think it's pretty sick. So you can like have like back paddles, essentially. for the games you're playing. I mean, you know, I don't know how much like competitive shooter stuff you'd be doing on this, but I mean, it's still nice to have extra buttons.
No, I think anybody that buys this isn't really trying to get into competitive gaming. It's mostly just gaming on the go, which makes the battery life so interesting. It's like only having 2 hours to me is deal breaker. Yeah. If I'm getting on a plane to go travel across the country, it's like you're going to be on the plane for longer than 2 hours most of the time.
A plane better have a port in the back of the seat or something I can plug into, you know what I'm saying? Like,
hopefully, unless you're traveling in budget, you know? Because this is supposed to be... you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's like if you're on JetBlue, Frontier, any of the budget airlines, you're out of luck, and you're going to really need to get yourself a portable battery.
Yeah, sure.
Portable battery pack or whatever
it's called. It's almost kind of mandatory for this device, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is for me when I'm traveling. But I think all the features are pretty good. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah, I will say too, one area of criticism, that audio jack is on the top of the device, so you almost have to wrap that. If you're using wired headphones, you kind of have to wrap it under to like use it. You can't have like the cord over the screen, but something that's interesting.
That is the case with my tablet, my Samsung tablet, and it's also the case, I think, do I have it? Yeah, I have it right here. Let me double check. And it's nice. Little Samsung tablet right here. The jack, it's on top. It's on the top, so that's not very uncommon. It's also, I've seen the audio jack on the top, or the Nintendo Switch also has it up there.
Oh, really?
I believe. Yeah, I think so.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess there's that bit of tension, but it's I don't know.
I agree with you though.
Interesting design choice. I think. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. That too. It's weird too. Like the Thunderbolts on the top. Granted, it's definitely not a Switch. It's not meant to dock or anything like that, but like,
right.
I don't know. It'd be interesting to see some sort of like seal on the bottom, so it kind of would make more sense to be dockable. But that's, you still could buy a dongle or something that could like, you could dock it with, I'm sure. So it's definitely not a deal breaker or anything, but.
Yeah. Well, could I give you the engineering perspective?
I'm ready for it.
If you're holding it up like so, yep. Your hands might get tired. So it's like you naturally want to place it down and like rest your palms. And if you have everything plugged in, it's like it's going to hit all the cables and stuff. A lot of my phone cables, because I'm lazy, I'll just be watching something and I'll like lounge on the couch and I'll like rest it on my chest and it'll be plugged in and the cables get like destroyed because it's bent like for so long. I think that might be a reason.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, in terms of like audio and stuff like that, I guess, I mean, mostly nowadays, like everyone has wireless earbuds or wireless headphones.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going to Bluetooth it anyway. So, it's like not a huge deal. It probably, like, even if the audio jack wasn't on here, I wouldn't think it'd be like a deal breaker or anything to not have an audio jack, at least in my opinion. I mean, it's cool that option's there still, I guess.
Yeah. I'm patiently waiting for all of these handhelds to come out so that we can do a side-by-side comparison and have some type of tier for each one of the handhelds, because the MSI Claw here essentially has three different tiers and different versions. So if we could have that comparing it with the Steam Deck versions, and then the Lenovo versions and the Asus, that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Than any of the ANEOs, because they come out with a new one like every 6 months.
you're giving me content ideas too of like when all these come out, we see all the reviews, we could just do like a tier list of handhelds. Just like,
dude, yeah, 100%.
Handheld tier list and just see what's the best.
That'd I think that's funny. A good idea.
I mean, that'd be some content right there. That's all I'm saying.
Yep. But anyways, that article was coming from Emma Roth at The Verge, and that's the MSI Claw. But
cool to get the details on more... the price points. I like it all.
Yeah. I'm more excited for I keep stumbling on my words. Jeez. I'm more excited for the next article here. The Star Wars. I'm a big Star Wars fan. Too. So I'm very excited for you to tell me all about it.
Yeah. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, another studio is born. Star Wars Jedi Director starts a new studio with a bunch of ex-respawn talent. So I'm just gonna apologize up front. Stig Asmussen. Is Musen? I don't know how to say his last name. He reveals Giant Skull. Yeah. Michael McWhorter?
McWhorter? McWhorter.
Gordon.
McWhorter.
Quarter.
McWhorter.
Michael
McCoy. He goes by Mike, apparently.
Goes by Mike. Yeah, he does. Look at that. Mike and Mike, baby. Giant skull. Look at this logo, Mike. Look at it. Giant skull. It's a pixelated skull, it looks like.
Yeah. Very... looks old school, like it would be in like an 8-bit game or something.
Yeah, it kind of does. Anyways, game director Stig Smoosen, who left Respawn Entertainment last fall after making two games for publisher Electronic Arts, has a new studio. It's called Giant Skull, and he's bringing a long list of ex-Respawn talent with him for this new venture. Polygon, I didn't even say. It's from Polygon, ladies and gentlemen. Anyways, Asmussen's credits include Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, its sequel, and multiple God of War games. So it should be no surprise that this is that his new company is described as, quote, dedicated to building gameplay-driven, story-immersed action-adventure games set in captivating worlds. Sign me up, Mike, right now. Injected in my veins, baby. Sign me up. All about it. Giant Skull's, Giant Skull's first untitled project is a AAA single-player focused action-adventure game built in Unreal Engine 5, developer said in a news release announcing the studio. Put it in my veins, Mike. You know what I'm saying? Just right now. Just give it to me. Joining Asmussen at Giant Skull are other veteran game developers from Epic Games, Riot Games, and Rocksteady Studios, including John Carr, technical director of Star Wars Jedi Survivor, Patrick Murphy, an art director who worked on Fortnite, Valorant, League of Legends, and God of War. Lauren McLemore. Dude, these names were like so easy. I thought they were all just gonna roll. All
right. they're all English.
A lead producer of Fortnite, Jeff Maggers, design director on the Star Wars Jedi games, and Brian Campbell, formerly animation director at Epic Games. These are some like head honchos, Mike, out of the studio. Okay. We're kind of cooking.
Well-renowned.
We're kind of cooking. Yeah.
There's going to be a lot of hype with this for sure, man.
Giant Skull. I'll keep an eye out for the studio. We have assembled a talented team of renowned for immersive storytelling, heroic combat, and exhilarating traversal. And our goal is to craft a rich universe that players will want to lose themselves in for years to come, as Moosen said in a statement.
Live there he is service, right, live action, live everything. That's what's going to happen here.
There he is right there.
We're building the next format.
We want players to join us on every step of the amazing journey, and as we pave the way for our upcoming game, said Anthony Scout, COO, CFO of Giant Skull, and formerly director of operations at Rocksteady Studios and head of Unbroken Studios. We're creating something special and have been fortunate enough to assemble an incredible initial team of developers who are extremely passionate and experienced in creating genre-defining third-person action adventures. Giant Skull's announcement comes just weeks after mass layoffs of publishers EA, which also canceled Respawn's in-development first-person shooter set in the Star Wars universe. As Moosen's new studio also comes amid severe cutbacks at studios and publishers across North America and Europe, thousands of video game workers have lost their jobs this year following a similar dour year. Dour? That's interesting. It's like sour. Is that a typo? Similarly,
I don't even know.
Sour year of employment in the industry. I feel like sour makes more sense. Anyway, Mike, there you go. That's the only thing I have to say about this is everything about this I want right now and in my veins, baby.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch of head honchos from a lot of very successful game and IPs, so it should be good, hopefully, if they got the right people, and it looks like they do. They definitely have, I think, the studio heads and the main decision makers correct, because I mean, how can you go wrong with people that have created major hits like League of Legends, Valorant, Fortnite, God of War, Jedi Survivor, and how many other games did you list? It's wild. Yeah. Absolutely wild. And it's all going to be in Unreal Engine 5, which is pretty sweet to see already games and studios being built with the purpose of using Unreal Engine 5. And if anybody has used Unreal Engine 5 before, they understand how good and how promising it is.
It's quite an engine, making realistic, almost lifelike games in some cases. You know what I'm saying?
Facts, yeah. I love the destruction-based game Finals, the Finals, that uses Unreal Engine 5. That's very exciting stuff.
Very successful game. There's a 5v5 mode coming out for that game, Mike. I mean, it's just, it's out here being successful. You know what I'm saying?
very excited to play that. Giant Skull. Not really much else to add, is there? It's just new studio. So many studios right now have just completely fallen apart. And obviously, new studios are going to show up and probably take their place.
This thing, I mean, it just gets me excited, too. Like, it's I think it's awesome to highlight these and just be like, hey, look, like, you know, like, a lot of people losing jobs and stuff like that. But there's also a lot of people just saying, like, this is my opportunity to go and start something new. So some of those developers can probably, like, join in and they can help each other, you know, make something cool. So, I don't know, it's exciting stuff. I feel like we haven't heard many new studios recently. So this is hopefully kind of a silver lining in the mass layoffs we're seeing.
Very true. I think there is a little bit of maybe say caution we should have. Labeling yourself as a AAA studio when you're brand new, it's like, okay, where's the funding coming from? How does that work? What kind of influence is there to appease the funding and get their return on investment? And how's that going to impact the quality of the game that you push out? Because I think we're going to cover this later at the end of our episode here, but AAA studios just want to appease the shareholders, or the profits are all that really matter, not the quality of the game. And hopefully that doesn't take place here. This could be a fresh new start on how to do a studio better. And we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, it's very true. And that's kind of, you know, it's optimism I'm going to try and hold with this kind of, with these new studios, is hopefully it's, you know, it doesn't fall in the same traps that some of these bigger studios fall into. And then we see the game put out.
100%. And I think that's the best way for us to do this, because we've covered so many layoffs the last like 3 to 4 months now that I don't think I can mentally handle any more sad news in the gaming industry. Like, other than good games coming out like Helldivers 2 that become absolute like bombastic, awesome. So, yeah, a game I got to get on pretty soon here because my coworkers will not shut up about it.
Go, you gotta do it for Democracy, like.
Yeah, he tells me every day, like, he came in late this morning a little bit, and he goes, sorry, I was up late spreading Democracy.
Nice.
So silly. Yeah, 100%, every time, dude.
Funny.
All right, what do you say we move on to the next article here?
I say.
Another interesting one in the gaming industry space is unionization, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Wild. So this article... When did this one come out? It came out earlier this week, actually on a Saturday, around Friday or Saturday of last week.
It was the weekend.
Yeah, which is no, like, I thought they would have saved it for Monday. But this comes from gameindustry.biz. It is from Brendan Sinclair, managing editor. We've covered his articles countless times. I think we've actually covered one last week. So the title of the article is 600 More Activision QA Workers Have Unionized. Latest code CWA group is the first to form under Microsoft's labor neutrality agreement. Oh, buddy. All right, so another swath of Activision QA workers has unionized, as the Communication Workers of America announced today that Microsoft has voluntarily recognized a union for workers at Activision Central Quality Assurance. Well, at least Microsoft's taken the initiative to be like, you guys got a union. Fill it.
Yeah, work on it.
Yep. So approximately 600 employees in California, Texas, and Minnesota will be represented by the union, which the CWA says makes it the largest group of union representation, representative workers at any U.S. gaming company. CWA now represents more than 1,000 Microsoft employees between this union and previous organization workers. Organized workers at ZeniMax QA, Blizzard Albany, and Raven Software, all of which have basically been acquired by Microsoft in the last, what do you say, like 3-4 years? Well, no, it would have been longer than that. Maybe 5 or 6 for ZeniMax.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. Microsoft continues to keep its commitment to let workers decide for themselves whether they want a union, said the CWA president Claude Cummings Jr. Claude. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, Cloud, I don't know.
I believe that's a French first name. So he continues on in his quote, time and again, other big companies in the industry have made the decision to undermine and attack their own employees when they should join together and form a union. Microsoft's choice will strengthen its corporate culture and ability to serve its customers and should serve as a model for the industry.
That's interesting. It's almost as if they like saw the union coming regardless. Yes. And they were like, if we get them in a union now, then all we have to do is negotiate with the union so that we don't have to pay anybody more than we have to. could be like a reverse Uno card or something, you know? Microsoft's making bank, but it's good to see that. I mean, I think union, I don't know how you feel about unions. I think unions, collective bargaining is usually a good thing.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. I'm pretty positive about it.
Yeah. Could be some ways it gets dicey, but let's not get into that because it easily gets into political stuff.
Like with anything, there's two sides.
Oh, dude, for sure. Could be controversial. It's wild. But let's continue on. So QA tester and union member Kara Fannin said the workers wanted to see better pay and more career opportunities. Fannin continued on saying that quality assurance roles are described as a way to get your foot in the door in the video game industry. But the truth is, at best, we get the internal job posting before the public does. We're ready to grow our careers here and believe that having a strong union contract will set workers and the company up for success. That's a good idea. Yeah. So if they want to have this whole thing where they're saying QA testing, like you're a play tester going in there trying to find bugs and getting really annoyed that the game doesn't work and you try to tell people to fix it and they can't, that's basically your job. is the entryway to get the internal jobs. But if you're in the union, maybe the union can bargain of like, hey, instead of like hiring outside, why don't you take the best candidate we have and promote them?
Yeah.
So they continually stay in the business.
Yeah. I think there's stories of this too. I was watching I watched the latest kind of Naughty Dog documentary they did on Last of Us Part 2. I think if I remember correctly, one of the main game designers of Last of Us Part 2, I want to say he started off in QA and he kind of made that climb kind of like this. He was an extremely like curious QA tester. And like he presented some like weird stuff to like some of the people like at Naughty Dog, and it eventually got to a point where like he got to talk about like, oh, like I like what I really want to do is game design kind of thing. And he had these ideas and he like presented them to Neil or whoever. And they were like, yeah, it's actually not bad. Like, why don't you give it a shot kind of thing? And he ended up doing well. Oh, nice. And it got to a point where he worked his way up. And so, there, I mean, there are
stories.
Got to
get in the door sometimes.
I mean, yeah, there are stories of that, especially in QA itself. I think, too, like, and I mean, it's a fair point, I guess. Like, trying to, you know, you need to find a way to get your foot in the door. And that's kind of like how people do it, probably, is through QA. And like, yeah, and, you know, the truth is, like, you know, it's at best QA workers they will get the internal job posting first, which I mean, it's still an advantage. It's, you know, but at the same time, like, I think it's also important to recognize, like for any like sort of career or anything like that, like you have to like find a way to stand out in some cases in order to like, you know, move up a ladder or get to where you want to be. And so like the onus is definitely on you to a certain extent to still like kind of push and make that, you know, make those connections.
You gotta ask too.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's like, you have to, I don't know, you have to be, you definitely have to, like, there's definitely some effort needed on your side. And so, like, but at the same time, I'm not against, like, if this is a way to make it easier for more people to get those opportunities, then, yeah, it's awesome. But, yeah, like, I think to a certain extent, though, like, if you have a clear-cut goal of where you want to go or where you want to be at, like, a certain company, then this is certainly a way to get in there. But also, just, like, if you put in that, you know, if you, you know, talk to the right people and you put in that, put in the effort, then, you know, you could be successful, too, so. Yeah, I don't know. It's cool stuff, I think, all around, though. I mean, I think just giving testers, like, you know, fair pay, too, I think is awesome. Like, just giving them better pay and then giving those opportunities. Like, I mean, I'm only seeing upside at that, you know, while we're reading this. So, and I'm hoping it's only upside, but I guess we'll see how stories develop.
Yeah, I mean, this is also coming around the same exact time that there were layoffs at Activision Blizzard.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that might have had a little bit of motivation from Microsoft standpoint. It's going to be very curious to see how this develops and what it can mean for the rest of the gaming industry. Because as the article said, with 600, where was it? It was like, oh, shoot. Yeah, so CWA now represents more than 1,000 Microsoft employees between this union and previous organized workers. And that essentially makes it the largest gaming union. Yeah.
Yep.
CWA says it makes it the largest group of union represented workers at a U.S. gaming company. So obviously, if they're putting the nuance of U.S.
Europe probably has the beat. So unions are kind of going extinct in the US in a lot of areas and industries, but it's good to see that it's coming to gaming. I think it needs to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, as long as it's an overall net positive, then I don't see anything wrong with it. You know, it obviously can get dicey on multiple levels, but I don't know. At least at the start here, like I said, curious to see how it develops, but I'm all for it from the looks of it now. So,
heck yeah. Well, what do you say we move on to the main event of
the main event?
The article. I think, was this the one that I sent us?
Yeah, it is.
It's a monster article.
It really is.
It's at a GameStop. GameStop. No, GameSpot. Yeah. Spot. GameStop won't stop. I'll let you take take the lead on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, for those on video, I'm scrolling the whole article right now. It's a lot.
It's a monster.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Definitely not gonna read the whole thing word for word, especially like some of the beginning parts, because it's most of the beginning is just a setup for kind of what's been happening in the gaming industry. We've been covering that already for months, so I don't really need to go into too much about how we got here, kind of thing. But I mean, you know, there's, you know, thousands of jobs, like lots of layoffs going on. They talk about too, like, you know, 2024 is like, it's looking like it's going to be worse than 2023 was in terms of layoffs and like these corrections. So it's not slowing down, kind of thing.
Yeah.
They talk
interest rates aren't probably going to come down until the end of July or something.
Yeah.
So that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. They talk about the GDC, State of the Games Industry Survey that came out, the live service and stuff like that.
Kind of everybody's very pessimistic.
It's a crazy time for sure. And so again, I just want to kind of go over some of the main points, some of the things we may not have covered about reasoning behind what could be going on. And this article also has tons of interviews with, like, you know, insiders and stuff like that. So it's an overall interesting read, and we'll have it linked below if you really like want to read the whole thing, because I think it's really cool. But yeah. I'm just going to go over a couple of kind of points here. I'll start kind of at this section here. So for the people who play games, the situation is baffling because 2023 is a banner year for the industry with a huge number of acclaimed games seeing release. This would suggest at least to players that the games industry overall is doing well and its success should be shared by the people who make its games. By and large, revenues continue to increase for the industry. Games industry analysis company Newzoo estimated the market generated $184 billion in 2023, an increase of 0.6% over 2022. And apart from layoffs, many companies released seemingly healthy financial reports and made moves that didn't seem to telegraph trouble. Sony paid $3.6 billion to purchase Bungie in 2022. Microsoft's $70 billion acquisition of Activision Blizzard was finalized in 2023. And EA spent $325 million on stock buybacks in the third quarter of 2023. Before its most recent layoffs and $1.3 billion on buybacks over 12 months. The recent heavy layoffs largely don't seem to come in service to keeping a company healthy, but are instead aimed at serving something else, the stock market. Getting into them, like,
yep.
Oh man,
here it comes.
Yeah, there's a quote too from the article. The same companies that are saying they're making record profits are also letting us know they can't afford to keep us. Making this make sense? Just make it make sense, you know. The main measure of success in today's economy is not profitability, but growth, and that is true in the games industry as well. Stock prices increase when companies report growth rather than conveying a company in crisis. Layoffs reliably correspond with a jump in stock price, because firing people is seen not as a reduction in the company's ability to make money in the future, but as a reduction in overall costs. Tech industry commentator and EZPR CEO Ed Zittrin refers to this as a rot economy, a system that favors the approach of growth over businesses being healthy and sustainable. What do you know about that rot economy, Mike?
Favors the appearance of growth.
Oh, man.
That's the key word there.
That appearance.
It's like we've lost all fundamentals.
Yeah. They talk about Embracer too. We can go into this a little bit. Embracer, known for its ravenous acquisition of development studios over the last few years, is an illustrative example of the growth-obsessed, stock market-focused approach to business. Embracer's quarter three financial report plainly states the company's main goal is to appease the stock market. The report suggests Embracer may see more layoffs as it tries to sell some of the studios it acquired over the last few years. Our overruling principle is to always maximize shareholder value in any given situation, the report reads. It's like, geez, dude. We're just going for it, huh? Buy all these companies. Now they gotta sell these companies. Crazy.
They're just calling it out as they see it, because that's kind of what it's been for a very long time now. It's just, it's all about the stock market and returning money to the investors. And it's just, it's kind of lame, man. If you're like in the working class, you can't really buy a whole bunch of stocks. You're just trying to work and make a living wage. But instead of paying the workers that are putting in the work, they're paying the people that invested. It's like, I get that to a certain degree, but it's like, geez, man, you're not even trying to be just good company with good products. You're just trying to appease investors all the time. It's lame.
Yeah, it's crazy. So there's a couple sections of this article. We'll talk about this one. This one's our reality set in. It's possible to think about what's happening in the games industry today without the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. With so many people avoiding public places and events, the games industry saw an explosive increase in growth in 2020 and 2021. A 2022 report from PwC charts gaming's massive leaps from $162.4 billion in revenue in 2019 to $196.9 billion in 2020 and $214.2 billion in 2021. Yeah, certainly no surprise there. And I'm pretty sure I was aware, like, everyone was inside playing games for the most part, right? You just didn't want to go out. In all entertainment, we saw just a mass spike in consumption, which required a lot of reaction as to, like, how are we going to maintain this, maintain services, grow? Ben Cavillo, founder and CEO of publisher Midwest Games and former lead program manager of Netflix's game division, told me. And then a lot of people just jumped at the opportunity. And obviously, we saw the amount of investment that went into games during the period was massive. And each company was hiring at rates that were unprecedented as well. Like we've talked about. We're hiring all these people, you know. Crazy. There was overstaffing during the pandemic on the expectation that the games industry growth during those years would continue forever. But reality set in and companies had to level set. That's what we talked about. That's what we mentioned. Overhiring to a point now.
All the time. Yeah. I feel like everybody has been overhiring, or they had overhired in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Trying to steal competition from your competitors in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. So I'll read this a little bit too, because this kind of talks about your interest rates, Mike. It says, Hanson also pointed to other factors dovetailed? Is that dovetailed?
That is dovetailed.
I've never seen it written before.
I've
never seen it written before. I've just heard it. That's funny.
You know how you like see words for the first time, like legitimately the first time or in a very long time, you have no idea how to pronounce it.
Yeah, sometimes like, I have no idea how to spell dovetailed, but I thought it was two words. I don't know if it was one.
Sometimes I'll see like guarantee and be like, how do I pronounce that? Garn? You know what I mean?
Literally. Oh man. Okay. That's so funny. All right. This, by the way, we're talking about Lisa Cosmos Hansen. She's the president and CEO of analyst firm. Nico Partners. Yeah. Nico Partners is the name of the firm. So Hansen pointed out that other factors that dovetail with the reduction of growth and demand for games. One of those is a sudden increase in inflation, which hit a 40-year high midway through 2022. Federal Reserve responded by increasing interest rates, which made it more expensive to borrow money. That drastically brought down investment in the games industry, since investors could get a guarantee of a high return off safer bets like treasury bills. Dude, we're getting economic.
Take your money somewhere else,
we're getting economic. Investment in the games industry plummeted. According to capital analyst firm PitchBook, it fell from $14.6 billion in 2022 to just $4.1 billion in 2023. That was slightly higher than 2019's $3.8 billion, but a drastic difference from the highs of the pandemic, when investors had been enticed by increased revenues and the hype surrounding Web3 and metaverse technologies.
Crypto stuff.
Web3, it's like, I like feel like I just forgot about the Web3 movement.
It's crazy. It might come back depending on what happens with TikTok. that's my opinion, but we'll see.
Yeah. Absolutely crazy stuff. So they talk a little bit about that. I'm gonna skip ahead a little bit. So talking about profitability isn't enough. It's kind of another section of this. Venture capitalist and analyst Matthew Ball, wrote an expansive essay detailing his view on what is happening in the games industry. The piece runs some 16,000 words covering the factors related to the pandemic, as well as a number of other elements affecting the industry. One of the factors Ballpoint's two is that gaming wasn't just impacted by post-COVID bounce back. Revenues are down more than anyone expected. He said, quote, in the U.S., for example, gaming revenues is down 6.3% from 2021, $2.4 billion annually. Ball told me in an email, after inflation, the market has shrunk 15%, roughly $9.6 billion. No one forecasts this decline, and instead, many executives, companies, consultancies, banks, etc. expect a considerable growth. The result is that the games industry is quite literally tens of billions smaller than expected. Meanwhile, costs have surged due to inflationary adjustments, talent scarcity during the pandemic, competition with big tech, venture capital, and Chinese game studios, as well as much-needed reductions in crunch. There's a lot of factors here, Mike. There's so much going on.
It's a worldwide economy now, so everything is basically pulling everything else in different ways that we probably haven't ever seen before. So especially, you know, the panty happened. So So when that happens, it's like unprecedented. It's wild. All of it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that I didn't even consider until I read this article was this next paragraph here said, major contributor to that drop in revenue is the fact that the same number of people are gaming for about the same amount of time that they did in 2019. So it's like kind of like leveled out almost. It's like now it's kind of, you know, 2019 was now kind of the same.
I feel like that's the same thing with different platforms too, like very niche platforms. Remember, I think I sent you the Devin Nash video back in the day about how Twitch was on a downward slope and was dying. And then during quarantine, it skyrocketed in popularity because everybody came back to watch games again and got big into gaming. But as you can see, that's not going to last forever. People have responsibilities and you can't just be gaming and starting podcasts and talking every day about it.
Yeah. So then you got us. We started technically we started 2022, right? It's like post-pandemic pretty much. But hey, we're still kicking.
Yeah.
Honor.
We're going strong.
So while other entertainment businesses have also seen a reduction in their business from the heights of the pandemic period, they're still ahead of where they were before the pandemic, but gaming is not. So it's like really weird. Like, I guess other industries are kind of cruising. Here we are. The revenue pullback is partly, but far from just relating to COVID. 2019, 73% of Americans played video games, and they played for an average of 12.7 hours a week. By 2021, it was 76% at 16.5, and by 2022, it was back down to 73, just 13 hours. Yet while most industries have experienced the COVID pullback, books are still up from 2020 to 2021. TV, video is up, music is up, e-commerce is up. It's gaming that is the outlier. Think of gaming as a super high growth industry, but it's actually falls short of the average industry and country's rate of growth. Is gaming growing, Mike? I don't know, dude. This report seems to think otherwise.
It depends on the metric, I think. I believe that more people are gaming more than ever. I believe that more people are gaming on multiple platforms more than ever. And I think there's more cross-platform, cross-saves, cross-generational games than ever before. And I also think there is an element to this where gaming is more socially acceptable than it's ever been before. And I think that goes a very long way because not even 2014, people were making fun of you if you played video games. It really wasn't until the breakout of like Fortnite where everybody started playing games again. There are people in my life that I know have never played video games before and they've picked it up in the last like 5 years, which is wild. It's like you've been on this planet for 35 plus years.
You've taken all this other entertainment
now.
And you're just now getting to the most engaging and interactive form of entertainment there is, arguably.
Yeah. Crazy. And you've been trashing it forever. And it's like, they're always just like, oh my gosh, Star Wars is amazing. It's just like, you know what's wild? Is Jedi Academy. Let me introduce you to how to become a Jedi. Just little things like this.
Have I shown you Fallen Order? Did it get Fallen Order? It's kind of a Souls-like, so I don't know. They'd have to play it on easy, but it's still a possibly. Another thing too, I didn't think about, but this is certainly I think got some like factors into it. It says we think that we think about the arcade era and the console era and the digital era, where most things are consumed and bought digitally. We're also moving into the ultra digital era of the cloud. that is going to be the next 5 to 15 years down the line. And I think a lot of companies are starting to prepare for it, and they're adjusting some strategies off of that and rethinking about things during this time period as there's this large shift. That's true. Yeah. I mean, it's just, we're at the cloud period, right? Like, we're getting to that. So, and like physical games, Xbox already reducing their physical department.
Yep.
They laid people off. It's like games are starting to shift digital now. You don't own anything, Mike, but I'm not going to get into that right now because that's a whole other like segment that I'm just, you know.
Oh, I think we've talked about it so much on the pod that it's like, I don't think we can do it anymore.
Please see our previous two episodes.
Yeah, seriously. Like, went on a couple of good rants for that.
Yeah. TikTok's coming out shortly of our rants.
And like and subscribe. Yeah, you continue on.
Well, I was going to say, so we could go on the next section. So the psychological permission. I like kind of skimmed through this and read like most of it. So we're going to start from the top. While the issues facing the games industry might explain why 2023 weren't as strong of a year as it appeared to be, they don't fully explain layoffs. After all, businesses have other ways of reducing costs and weathering tough periods than firing huge numbers of workers. It's also a lot of money to fire people, so there's that.
It really is, yeah.
Kerry Kwok, I hope I said your name right, Kerry. I'm sorry for that. Executive Vice President and Head of Gaming, Digital Entertainment, and Lifestyle Tech Public Relations firm Berlin Rossen started working in PR for video games 20 years ago. She told me that at the time, layoffs would have been seen as a corporate crisis. Communications professional like her would have been hired to help manage messaging, protect brand reputation, and avoid consumer backlash. Heavily cutting staff was viewed as a last resort with potentially dire consequences. Ain't that right?
Nobody cares now. That's the crazy thing. Nobody cares, which is wild. Zero brand loyalty. Nobody cares about brands. Wild, dude.
It's shifted, huh? Shifted.
Yeah. Let's see what she says about it. Hopefully she has the same sentiment as I do.
Well, let's get into that. So she says, quote, fast forward to now, and I think there is some kind of normalization that that's happening in our industry, unfortunately, where we're seeing where you're seeing in major companies, they're doing it. And now we're dealing with a very complex situation with the nature of our industry, as well as the economics issues. When they're seeing every big player is doing it, you kind of feel like, okay, well, if they're doing it, I probably should do it. There's almost a herd mentality going on to a certain extent. I think it kind of gives every company in the industry almost a psychological permission, if you will. I didn't think about that too. It's like, you know,
it makes sense.
If all these other companies are laying people off, like, let's bite the bullet. We may not have to, but like, hey, if there's any time to do it, it's now kind of thing.
Oh yeah, man. There's definitely a herd mentality because I don't think a lot of people really know what they're doing in some positions. I think they show up, they get a paycheck, they go home, and then they get promoted when they probably shouldn't sometimes. I mean, that usually happens with like bad management systems. And in this case, if you see a company like Microsoft with a very strong reputation of being a very successful company, or Apple or any other tech company that's on a huge scale having layoffs, it's going to make a smaller like studio just be like, oh crap, if Microsoft's laying off people, they have like all the analytics and like probably like crazy amount of PhD guys like just in the background data mining like the actual economics cooking of the world, and they're like, oh, I see what's happening, like 2 months time, we got to prepare for it. That's what they assume what Microsoft's doing, and meanwhile Microsoft's just like, man, we could have done better in like the stock, so you know what, cut them. Like, this is how we increase profits, get rid of employees, get the contract workers. So you never know why a company is really laying off, because they never say it. Have you noticed that they never give a specific reason?
They're never straightforward about it. Yeah, it's just like,
exactly. Yeah, it's just like, oh, we had to make changes.
Yeah,
very vague.
Yeah. So there's a little more detail to that, I guess. Some companies might be facing a quarterly earnings report that needs a boost when facing shareholders, Kwok said. And layoffs are a way of cutting costs to paint a rosier picture for them. And shareholder perception and pressure is a real issue. As well, seeing others cutting their costs can lead to investors pressing company leaders on why they're not making similar moves to stay competitive. Wow. That's crazy. That's insane. Yeah. Influence.
It's a very selfish mentality. Yeah. A very selfish mentality, because if you get to that level of like, we need to cut people, do oh my gosh, like from a business perspective, this is probably why I'll be a horrible business owner, but you shouldn't like when you hire somebody and you're paying them, you're kind of responsible for them in a way. Like in the United States, it's like when you're hired, you get health insurance.
Yeah,
that is a huge deal.
Yeah,
health insurance and retirement, like that's crazy. There's no safety nets here. So if you're not employed, you don't have health insurance. You don't have like the retirement fund going up in value.
Yeah,
and that's a very real risk. So if you're hiring people in the U.S., it's like you're kind of responsible for them in a way. It's like they're responsible to give you like work and stuff like that and productivity, but you're also responsible for their like well-being in a way, in almost like a literal way, because they also have to do their job, obviously. It's just it's wild how they're just like stock calling up the CEO and just being like, hey man, listen, like I'm not getting like my extra million and I'm trying to go out to like some tropical island that you can't pronounce at the end of the year with my great-great-grandkids. So if you could just like fire an entire studio so I can do that, that'd be nice. Like, you know what I mean? It's just, that's sick. Wild. Yeah, it's sick. Yeah, by the way, unemploy 600 people and good luck with them getting a new job and health insurance benefit. Just nuts. Absolutely nuts.
There's more to this quote too. He said, I think there's something to be said about tech industries normalizing this type of behavior and normalizing the, oh yeah, let's just lay people off rather than exploring every possible alternative before you just uproot people's lives. And I think it's an ethical question. And I think that's part of the reason why we're seeing so many people ready to just get organized in their labor. It's one reason among many others.
Easily, dude.
Yeah. It's crazy, dude.
Dude, I here's a bold statement now. I'm older than you, but... When the 2006 to 2008 Great Financial Crisis happened and everybody got laid off, people that were working at companies for 20 plus years got laid off and they were left with like nothing, right?
Yeah.
When that all went down, the like my generation of those were like our parents that got laid off or dads. I saw that and I was like, oh, I have zero brand loyalty to anybody now. Like that's it's a mental shift, and the same thing is happening. Like that's never really changed. It's like layoff after layoff after layoff, and now I think that's why you're seeing people only working at a company for 2 years and switching.
There's so much turnover
constantly. Dude, there's people in my company that show up for like a month and they're off to a new one.
People show up my company for like a few months and then client drops something like that and they're just like, all right, I'm out. Like it's like, okay,
yeah, see ya.
Yeah, it's wild. It is wild for sure. And there's clients I work for too that they're laying off and letting go people that have been there 15, 20 years. It's like, oh, it's insane, dude. It's just insane. Dude,
absolutely wild.
It hasn't changed. That's funny. Oh, Mike, we could talk about consequences of games as a service. You want to talk about this? Oh, jeez.
Very few successful ones that make all the money, and then a bunch of trash. Yep. That's basically what it is.
Here we go. So the games industry has always been driven by hits, but with the rise of games as a service model, the biggest hits can stick around for much longer. That has created a situation where measuring the growth or revenue of the whole industry can tell a partial story, because a large amount of the money goes to only a few games. That's another element of what's affecting the games industry now, Ball told me. Alongside the other factors is an ever-increasing struggle for new games to break out, Ball said in an email. There were incredible financial successes, Helldivers 2, Power World, but the list of unsuccessful canceled and bombs is frighteningly long. This had led many publishers to reassess their development pipelines and incubation projects, often canceling games outright or significantly reducing their budgets. This leads to talented developers without a budget to work against, and at a time where other titles at their parent company are being paired hardback too, underpinning the challenge, the fact that the largest games, Fortnite, Roblox, Call of Duty, GTA, PUBG, FIFA, continue to grow and strengthen, leaving little space for others. In his essay, Ball called this effect ossification of the industry, a tendency that it is to harden against the biggest, most entrenched games. Those games put consumers into walled gardens owned by certain companies, and the more time and money they spend there, the tougher it is for them to leave and play something new. Every dollar you spend in Fortnite, for instance, is a dollar that's not going to another game in the industry, but it's also a dollar that pressures you to keep playing Fortnite. The game also gains from your presence, because because if you're invested in Fortnite, it's more likely your friends will join you, get invested, and build reasons to keep playing. This enhances the player community within the game, drawing in more people who are likely to get invested and stick around too. Yeah, and like it's kind of a thing I didn't think about, but he's definitely 100% true there. It's like, you know,
yeah,
these bigger games, they keep the loyalty of their players. And then, yeah, it's, you know, why look for another game when you're enjoying what you're playing?
Exactly. And that's a key point that he just said in the essay was, if you're already there and you have a financial incentive to stay there, or whatever there is, the game community or whatever, you're going to be advertising for them, which is kind of like pays for itself, which is kind of nuts. It's like you're buying cosmetics in there to stay longer, and you have that incentive to keep coming back so you can show it off. And then you're advertising to your friends that, you know, in like real life or at work or wherever you see them, or they're on other games, like, hey, come over here and play Fortnite with me. And then yeah, the first thing you do is like, yo, you like this game? Like, that's pretty cool, right? Okay, cool. Check out this gun skin that I got. It's pretty wild. You know, check this out. I can be John Wick in Fortnite. Like, you know, and it keeps people coming back. And then they're going to say the same thing. Oh, how'd you get that? It was just becomes a trend.
Yeah. yeah, it's very true. And they continue on a little bit. So part of the reason why we're seeing a lot of mergers and acquisitions in the games industry too is that the bigger you get, you kind of continue to get bigger and bigger. When the industry becomes more dominated by key players, it's harder for smaller studios and the indie studios to survive. So they have two choices: try to make it happen or get bought. Which is like, it's like there's two kind of like things there.
Yeah.
And since the same period, we saw a huge amount of it of additional investment in the games industry, also saw a huge amount of consolidation. Cavallo said he thought that consolidation was also a big factor in the current state of the industry. About $3.5 billion was spent on mergers and acquisitions in games in 2019, while that number has exploded to $122 billion in 2022. Apart from changing the overall landscape of the industry, one company purchasing another almost always leads to staff cuts and new leadership, eliminates redundant positions, and makes other changes. I mean, yeah, it's, you know, we talked about that with the Xbox layoffs too. That's a big reason is like, and people, a lot of people predicted that, and they were true of like, there's going to be layoffs when this goes through. So like, be prepared for that kind of thing. I'm sure people working, you know, there would probably have the same mindset of just like, all right, well, I need to start thinking ahead because it may not, have my job by the time this is done.
It happens every time with the acquisitions. You have people that are leaving that are just, they'll come in to check out the new company culture, see how it changes if it does, because they were already on the fence, try to get their money and get out if they don't like it.
Yeah.
It's just what it is. That's what happens. It's the natural thing that happens with acquisitions, getting rid of redundancies.
Yep, exactly. I think it's kind of the last section, but they talk about short-term fixes for long-term damage. Layoffs might help companies accomplish their goals and spruce up their books for quarterly reports, but they won't help the industry in the long term. Layoffs won't address the reduction in growth or change what it costs to make games, and has fewer people in the studio staff won't help make more games to sell to players. There is some hope that revenue challenges will force publishers to really address cost growth, which was outstripped revenue growth for years in PC console games and is partly separate from developer compensation. But rising costs and declining margins are also a natural outcome of the low to no growth categories as each participant works to gain share or attention. We need more players, playtime, and spending. Layoffs and fewer new games are unlikely to achieve this. Yeah, so, I mean, solid point, you know.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah,
because you can't really dispute anything you just said.
Yeah, really. All the long-term trends are in gaming's favor, but most industries experience periodic hiccups, and sometimes they can last a while. I don't say that to make light of the situation. There's an utterly awful number of lives and families affected by this downturn, and some talented developers will forever exit the industry as a result, and some great games will never be finished. But the industry's current ails will eventually pass. While the layoffs might not always create consequences for companies in terms of bad PR or fall in stock prices, they are hurting the industry as well as the people who are forced out of their jobs. Tougher to qualify effects like decreased morale among those who kept their jobs when others lose them, or the companies or the gaming communities are nonetheless likely changing the future of the industry in the short and long terms.
Yep. This,
yeah, it's you know, you don't often think about the people that are at the studios, like what that people that stay after a layoff happens. It's definitely not the same, right?
So. You change the culture when you start laying out people that are very popular within the office that make the office a general nice environment to be in, to get you away from that like mundane thing. It's like everybody kind of rips on Bob that walks around to each cubicle and all he does is talk and like bother people.
but that guy might have good stories that make maybe you're having a really bad Tuesday. He comes by and he starts talking to you about the game that happened over the weekend, and it could be a nice little relaxing thing to get you away from that mindset. It happens, man. You have bad days at work and you need something to distract you. So getting rid of people like that is the culture of the company. It's not always the best thing.
Yeah, for sure. Also, again, we're almost to the end, but also a couple more points. Somebody to think about too, a lot of tech workers, game workers are told or taught, actually conditioned, I would say, that, hey, if you're a programmer, an engineer, or whatever, you're very independent. You can go anywhere, you can do anything. More and more, I think people are learning that it's not as easy as it sounds. In the games industry, especially, like, yeah.
No, man. No.
So, yeah. It's,
it's all about getting the work. That's the hardest part about, like, consulting work, because you and I work in consulting. So to get clients is the hardest thing. Once you have clients that are steady and reliable, you're good.
Yeah.
But to get your clients, that's the hardest part.
Yeah. Sales is,
I'm sure it's similar.
Yeah. I'm sure it is too. I mean, continuing on, I'll say, well, one of the challenges I see is just that people want to make the layoff situation simple. They want to point and say evil company, or they want to point and say COVID, or they just want to point and say a lot of things. But the reality is it's a lot of factors and it has led to a negative space. But what it should be doing for us is leading toward, well, how do we not get to this place again? How do we think, how do we think about things differently? How do we think about things more sustainably? How do we move from an industry that's considered hit driven to an industry that could be sustainable when we're operating at the right cost levels per game, and we don't I'm losing my spot. It's like such a long paragraph. Per game, and we don't just overly invest or overly risk. No matter what, we're in a creative space. It's a risky space, but we're risking everything when there are some things we don't have to risk as much. So I think sustainability is going to be a major conversation coming out of this. The all-important infinite growth value by investors isn't achievable by everyone. Setting up the industry to reevaluate how large swaths of it can continue to operate without being beholden to demand for an arrow that always points up and to the right. As Kaveo points out, how do we not just be a hit-driven business and actually get to the place where we can have sustainability where sustainability should be? There's a lot of factors here, Mike, I think, out of all this. There's also a lot I kind of like just didn't read in the article. So again, I implore people to go and read the full article to get all the context.
Oh, absolutely.
But like, those are kind of the main points of like, that I like when I was like reading through it, of like, oh yeah, this is like it adds a little more context that I didn't originally have to what could be the cause of these layoffs. And it literally is just a lot of things at once. That's kind of the big takeaway. It's not really just one thing.
Yeah, I think it's I think the gaming industry is very new in a way. It's old but new, because it's old because like by the day it came out in like the 80s, gaming and stuff like that. You can get into board games or whatever. But in terms of being new, it's like it's ever changing with the economic climate. The technology is always new. So you get a new workforce in that's like more skillful, or like just different things are going on with it. And I think everything that's happening in the gaming industry is very similar to what's happening in other industries across the world. And I think it might just be, this is what the future is. It might be. Yeah. In all industries going forward, with just prioritizing perhaps the stock market, profit sharing, and then the company culture layoffs. It seems like you see it everywhere now. It's very tough. I just think that the tech industry is being hit by it so rapidly in the last year, maybe 2 years, just across the board. And that's why we have a spotlight on it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and, you know, shout out to Phil Hornshaw. He's the one that wrote this article. He's the one that put together all the sources and everything. I think it's a really interesting piece. So, again, probably a must read if you're at all interested in what the industry layoffs could be, like, especially in the video games. But yeah, like you're saying, to tech, it's like, I don't know, it's been like this for over a year now, just like uncertainty in some aspects. So, it's wild times, Mike. It's wild times, dude.
Dude, not just tech, it's like startups in general, like sales, different Salesforce, WeWork, Another good example of like new industries, just massive layoffs, new companies having massive layoffs. It's tough. And you and I can't predict the future, but I personally don't think this is going to be the end of it. I think there's going to be more layoffs going into the year.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. There is. It's the unfortunate reality this year, especially. It's not going to slow down, so. But it's just crazy to think that, like what was wild to me is, how the investors, not only could they be, influencing negative decisions that negatively affect games, but they also could be influencing decisions that negatively affect the company in general and people's livelihoods.
Yeah.
That's nuts, just, you know?
Yeah, man. It's just what it is. Everybody wants to be a multi-billionaire so they can have their company be super successful, and you got to get to the stock market most of the time to make that happen. Got to appease the shareholders, pay them dividends. Never mind Joe Schmo working a line that's actually putting the tires on the car, you know?
Yeah. So what is the lesson here, everyone? Get into a trade. That's the last.
Get into a unionized trade in the Northeast and make six figures within 3 years. That's all you got to do. We need pipe fitters, boys.
Screw STEM. Just become go into the trade.
Yeah. Engineering is technically a trade skill.
I mean, yeah, it's true. Believe it or not. Especially,
technically, a trade skill.
Especially if you're into building bridges and stuff. Like, come on now. We need that infrastructure. It's a trade.
Well, believe it or not, engineers do not build anything. They don't even touch a wrench.
Why no? They have
engineering.
They have to make sure that people that build the stuff don't mess it up, right? Like that's the
idea. Nothing, dude.
Well, I'm not saying they physically are out there doing the work. I'm saying they're designing the stuff so that the people that go and do the work don't actually build something bad.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, yeah. The engineers are engineering just means designing. That's all that is. Engineer means design.
Yeah. And, that's an interesting way of putting it. I never thought about it like that. But
Yeah. You can always catch the engineer out on the job site. Blue jeans, cleanest shoes, yellow vest, hard hat when you don't need the hard hat, safety goggles when you don't need the safety goggles, not required for PPE rules. And then, of course, the infamous clipboard. Then you're good.
Clipboard, yeah.
Dude, sometimes you get a ladder. Sometimes
I will say that's one thing I envy about engineers and stuff. Like you get to do those site visits, so you get out some. It's like you're not just stuck in an office the whole time. That's gotta be nice.
You would think so, unless you get out there and you messed up the design, and then you're getting yelled at by the contractor.
It could be rough. Right? It could be rough.
Yeah. Favorite question. So where did you go to school?
Dude, if someone asked me that, I'd be like,
I'd just be like, I don't know, man.
Harvard.
Yeah, Harvard, okay. Oh, man. Oh, well. I think this week was a little bit more positive than normal, and we finally got some more insight from an industry report essay professional. And, I think industry insight of what's going on in the video game industry and why the layoffs are happening.
Yeah, I thought it was very, very insightful. So it's good to get articles like that every now and again where it's like an actual like study, I feel like.
Yeah, a think piece. And is that what they call it? Like a think piece opinion article? It's a heck of an article, man. So everybody that stuck out and they're like checking it out, paid attention to it, definitely check the links in the description below. We have the links to the full articles that we covered with timestamps, with social media links, with segments for the YouTube channel. If you don't have time to actually listen to our hour plus long episodes, you can always check out the small segments that we handpick thinking, hey, this could be evergreen content. So,
yep.
Like and subscribe.
And comment.
Comment below. And, yeah, that's the other one.
And rate and favorite.
Yes, sir. We got to get on our YouTube Shorts game, though. Did you watch the article or listen to the article or video that I sent you earlier? It's like about how to be a one percenter. There are two content creators that don't know anything about it, but at the end, they were talking about content creation, the YouTube algorithm, and how ruthless it can be.
It's very ruthless.
Ruthless. So I'll talk to you about that later, though. Do you have anything to add? I think we got everything.
I think we got everything. Yeah.
Okay.
We're almost at an hour and a half. Let's get him out.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm getting kind of hungry, and the dog's getting—he's almost awake. Whatever. I turned around, looked at him, I was like, this guy is drunk. I'll have to show you a picture later. Anyways, thank you all for joining us. We appreciate you. This is the M2 Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Anthony, and Kyle Heath. Love you. Appreciate you. Stay gaming. We'll catch you later. Peace out.
Keep gaming. Bye.
Keep gaming. Bye-bye.